This podcast is brought to you by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings and welcome to today's episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood. I'm the Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience, and Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. It's also broadcast across Taranaki and the Waikato and throughout the Canterbury region and to the Wairarapa. Today, our guest is Mirjana Stevens, a director of Whakatū Incorporation across the top of the South Island. I so enjoyed the kōrero with Mirjana. It's a very full interview. Let's get on with it and prepare to be surprised. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to Climate Matters today's guest, Mirjana Stevens, who is a director of Whakatū Incorporation in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, and who whakapapas to Ngāti Rangi, Ngāti Ranganui, and Ngāti Rārua. Mirjana and I first met about 8 years ago when she was spearheading the development of the pioneering Te Tauihu intergenerational strategy, Tūpuna Pono, being good ancestors. She also has a deep multi-generational marae background and a wide and innovative track record in business. Tēnā koe, Mirjana, and a very warm welcome to Climate Matters.
Tēnā koe, Lindsay. It's lovely to be here again.
The subtitle of our series, Front Footing the Future, is Getting Our Climate Policy Fit for Purpose. In that context, I'd like to start by offering you a blank canvas and inviting you to share any issues that are currently front of mind for you in that regard.
Yes, Lindsay, well, like you said, our marae is in the best place in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I often say the metropolis of Motueka. So like, you know, many communities across Te Tauihu, the top of the south, and also Aotearoa, you know, we have experienced, you know, repeated flooding, storms and infrastructure damage. And so, you know, some of our roads have been closed, the communities have been isolated, and actually many of our whānau have experienced significant stress. So what has stood out to me isn't simply, you know, the damage that those storms can, and, you know, occurs with those storms, but actually also what happens afterwards. At Te Āwhina Marae, we've deliberately developed a resilience program. We don't wait until an emergency happens, but we have to ensure that we're prepared, that we respond together as a hapori, as a community. And then afterwards too, we review, you know, our lessons of, you know, what we've learned and how we can be better prepared for next time, because these things are actually happening relatively frequently. Relationships matter long before an emergency occurs.
Oh, I love that answer, Mirjana. Before we actually get into the topics that I've listed, the subtitle of the series Front Footing the Future is Getting Our Climate Policy Fit for Purpose. In that context, I'd like to start by offering you a blank canvas and inviting you to share any issues that are currently front of mind for you in that regard.
You know, I do think climate policy still focuses too much on emissions and probably not enough on systems. You know, I think that we're still treating climate change as an environmental issue when really, actually, it's a societal issue. You know, if we only focus on reducing emissions, we'll miss, I think anyway, the much bigger opportunity. When I think about some of the work that we're doing at Whakatū Incorporation, we're looking at future food systems, which includes, you know, the restoration and protection of our biodiversity. We're looking at, you know, Indigenous heritage crops, and also the work that we're doing with our taonga, you know, marine species. So from our perspective, you know, that's important. And through this work, we're developing a, you know, a regional food strategy. And a wonderful example of a community who has, I think, their food system, who've adapted to climate change, is the communities that we've had the privilege of visiting in Peru. Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting. When we met the governors of their community, they were the governors of, you know, met the governor of the water, the governor of the mountain, the food, and so they were very connected into their natural world. For thousands of years, they know that they need to have access to good quality food, and so we were able to see their seed bank, and so their seed is really big on their potatoes and their sweet potatoes. In order to ensure food security for humanity, they were able to give some of their seed to the World Seed Bank in Norway. And when they gifted that seed to Norway, it was almost, you know, it was giving their children. During COVID, you know, I did call them to see how they were going. And, you know, for them, they would have food security for the next 100 years. Having that experience really tested us as to, you know, what we needed to get in place here. You know, I think from that perspective, we had to come back, we had to look at our own food resilience. And then how do we then, and that came through some of the work we did through the intergenerational strategy. I've seen the change, you know, our local Hapu Trust, Whakarewa, you know, the work they're doing and restoring landscapes here in Motueka, waterways, biodiversity that comes with cultural identity. And I think that one thing Tangata Whenua does really well is their intergenerational decision making. You know, we don't ask whether today's investment makes financial sense, but, you know, we ask whether our mokopuna will look back and say, you know, they made decisions that gave us more choices, not fewer.
What a wonderful answer, Mirjana. And I just want to say to listeners that I first met you when you were leading the development of the Te Tau Ihu intergenerational strategy about 8 years ago. The eight iwi across the top of the South Island had decided to get on with this stuff and not wait for the councils or government.
I know, and it's probably one of the most significant pieces of work, you know, I've been fortunate to be part of. But, you know, it was really a no-brainer when you think about the long haulers. It is business, mm-hmm. you know, to a certain extent as well, and it is community. Because I think when you start to think, you know, talk about climate change or some of these big gnarly issues, people are scared because, you know, how am I going to tackle this? Or, you know, oh, it just seems so insurmountable. But I think all of those people who turned up when we started to have, well, we were asking questions about courageous leadership, thriving communities. The questions, I think people were curious, they were interested, and it felt more like actually we're not alone.
Totally. And just stressing that not alone bit a bit more, I just want to highlight to listeners that you, Mirjana, are in Motueka, which is on the top of the South Island in New Zealand, and you were communicating with people in Peru about food security. Now, that sort of discussion is probably barely on the radar of 99% of the people out there, so I think that's just incredible. Anyway, moving on. I'm always fascinated by the depth of Indigenous knowledge, and I feel it has far more relevance to solving our current crises than it's normally recognised. I'd love it if you would expand on that theme, hopefully including a few examples.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Lindsay, and I take the approach that, you know, I believe that mātauranga, Māori and science, they're not competing systems. They are different knowledge systems, and sometimes they're asking many of the same questions. And what I find with science, you know, it's very good at measuring, modelling, testing and prediction. And sometimes it helps us to understand, you know, what is happening, how fast and why. Tauranga Māori, I think that contributes context, it contributes values, relationships, also ethics, you know, ethics and values, and also, you know, long-term observations. And mm-hmm. so why that matters is because, you know, we often think from a mātauranga Māori perspective, you know, what our responsibilities are and how we should respond. So I think the future isn't necessarily choosing between mātauranga Māori and science, but it's learning how we might weave them together. When I talked about the regional food strategy, our practice now on our land, which really embeds our sustainability program, Whenua Ora. You know, what we know is that through our generations, we've spent time observing seasonal patterns, species interactions, as well as ecosystem change. And, you know, fundamentally, that's data that then that is coded. And that might be coded through, for example, waiata, songs, you know, through our orators, through their whai kōrero. When I was in Peru, I saw how they were coding their genetics into their weaving patterns. And so,
fascinating.
Yeah, it was fascinating, and it made me think about how we, and so our code, so it wasn't always written, you know, in spreadsheets. We know what is threatened species. So again, we're trying to bring those threatened species plants back. How do we create opportunities of the future that don't exploit our natural world? I often think about that integration of, you know, how we are restoring the whenua, we're improving our biodiversity, we're thinking about that relationship that we have with the land and with those taonga, but we're also creating opportunities for our people. We're strengthening our language and culture. And ultimately, I think that we're leaving a place or a legacy in people that are stronger than when we've inherited it in our time, Lindsay. So, you know, that work for me is quite critical because, you know, it's a very healing and a very important piece of work that we're doing. And I feel like actually it breaks down a lot of potential challenges or barriers.
Thank you for putting that so well, Mitiana. I do need to move on. So I've come to an item that I've termed Māori business. I celebrate the scale and diversity of Māori business ventures. Please share with us your insights as to any key differences between successful, quotes, Māori, quote, close quotes, businesses and those in the wider business world.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, there's a lot of discussion around capitals. Most businesses will, you know, they might focus on financial capital, but I think if you look at Māori businesses, we look at multiple forms of capital. The people are important, the land is important, our culture is important, you know, all living beings are important, and I refer there to the biodiversity. You know, profit matters, but profit isn't the purpose. People's expectations are greater. You know, there's more need in terms of what people want. And so you get quite an interesting three generations, what their priority might be. Auntie might be really wanting, you know, the dividends important to her, whereas a younger person might say, well, you know, what's your position on climate change or the type of packaging we're using? So we've got to generate money to be able to fulfill some of the other responsibilities that we have. And I'm not too sure many other businesses would have those responsibilities. I think the other major difference too is that we do think in generations. You know, we were formally established in 1977, but I think every time, you know, when we're looking at investments, you know, we're often asking the questions of what are we leaving for those who come after us? And, you know, when you think that way, you're thinking about sustainability, you know, that stops being a compliance exercise, becomes good business. And, you know, we're coming off the back of, you know, like I said, you know, this intergenerational trauma, people disconnected from the land, from their lands because of what's happened, you know, through history. So it's such a privilege to be tangata whenua, but it's also a huge responsibility. You know, governments, from my perspective, you know, they're in for 3 years, they may get another term, whether that's local or, you know, at a national level. You cannot rely on them. You have to ensure that, you know, you can sustain yourselves, that you know the needs of your people and that you are part of a community. And so there's responsibilities there.
That's a really important message for people to hear, I think, Mitiana. A moment ago, you referred to the burden of history that made life harder for tangata whenua, and that leads me to the question of the Nelson Tents. I do want to acknowledge the long overdue settlement of the almost 200-year-long Nelson Tents court case. I'm not sure how it feels from a tangata whenua perspective, but for me as a Pākehā, to be honest, I choked up when I heard the decision had at long last been reached. Here's me, an old white male, goodness me. We've got listeners all over the country, Mitiana, so if you'll bear with me, I'll just give what I think's a little background on the Nelson Tents. About 200 years ago, when Europeans or Pākehā came to the top of the south, there was an agreement with the iwi of Te Tau Ihu that they would retain 1/10 of all the land involved. But that was an agreement that was never honoured, and there has been a running dispute ever since about the lack of honouring that. Is that a fair summary, Mirjana?
Yeah, it is. It is.
It would be great if you felt like expanding on that a bit now, because there are a lot of lessons for us in that sad history, I think.
Yeah, you know, this has been I think it's been New Zealand's largest piece of litigation on foot for quite a while now. So originally, Waka Tu, we were going through the Waitangi Tribunal. There were a distinct group of our ancestors who were, I guess, custodians of an estate, and we entered into that, I guess, that agreement in good faith, and the land that was meant to be returned to us wasn't returned. And it was decided that it was not a tribunal case, because then it came down to the actual, the actual agreement and the fiduciary duty that the Crown had to be able to ensure that that land was returned to us, which they never did. You know, when this deal came through, you know, we knew we had to live with others, you know, and that we wanted to be, you know, we wanted to ensure that they had a good life here too. We wanted to ensure that, you know, at least we could establish those relationships. But when agreements aren't honoured, and you know, that really saw the breakdown of our communities, of the fabric of our society at that time. And so, unfortunately, throughout that whole history, it has been to our detriment. It was an agreement and contract that wasn't honoured. The Supreme Court of New Zealand agreed with us and went back to the High Court to see what the remedy may be. And now we have an agreement moving forward that will need to go through legislation, and that's what's happening at the moment. So I'm hoping really that our communities here in Te Tau Ihu see it as a positive opportunity, you know, for our region. And it's a hard history, Lindsay, when you think about what our ancestors and what our families have been through. At the end of the day, we're very future focused, and this is what Te Here Anuku, this is what this opportunity provides. Yes. Te Here Anuku, at this stage, yes, is a trust. It's an interim trust that has been formed to be able to, I guess, hold any of the settlement that has been negotiated. So that's a combination of money and also land. And so it's a trust who will look after that in the interim.
Kia ora to that, Mirjana, and I'll be pleased to put a link to the Trust's website in the show notes that goes out with the radio show. Now, I want to move on from there. You've mentioned marae a few times. When the chips are down in an emergency, very often marae become anchor points in the immediate or longer recovery process. And I've been wondering if there is a place for what I've called a marae pākehā. Now, in saying that, I do realise that I'm rather framing a marae as a building, and I know full well that it's an awful lot more than that. It would be wonderful if you could expand on that and take it from there, please, Mirjana.
Yeah, and thank you for that question too, Lindsay. But I'll probably start by saying, you know, I don't think communities necessarily need to replicate marae. You know, marae are places of identity, whakapapa, tikanga, language, and also belonging. And they exist because of generations of relationships. But what potentially could be replicated are the functions that a marae performs. And, you know, those functions are belonging, trust, often say manaakitanga, and so around hospitality, there's leadership, connection. There's also, you know, shared responsibility. It's a bit of hard work, Lindsay, to, you know, eventually you're being there to run the pai pai and the kitchen and all sorts. But I think, you know, every community benefits from places where people genuinely know one another And I think actually, ultimately, that's what creates resilience. When I think about the history of Te Awhina Marae, you know, and it comes back into some of our previous discussion around history and context, the reality was that because when you are alienated from your land, there potentially then is no jobs. Like, you know, when I think about when our families had to move away from here, our marae was able to remain because of the leadership, those families, the ahikā families, and we ahikā means to keep the home fires burning, those few families of us that were able to remain on the land. And there was a couple of families, and I'm fortunate to be one of those families. The marae became a central place for people together, the community. And so it was given the name Te Awhina, which means to look after, to care for. I just also want to recognise the fact that, yes, of course, it's a place where we express ourselves and our culture and our practice, but it was also very much a community marae where we helped one another.
Now, I've got lots of questions I'd like to ask you, but I don't have lots of time. I haven't heard much in recent years of Tupuna Pono, and I'd love it if you're in a position to update me and listeners.
Tupuna Pono was the Te Tauihu intergenerational regional strategy, but Tupuna Pono specifically was, I guess, the vision of the region, which was to be good ancestors. And under the strategy, we were the first region, I think, in terms of how we put together our regional strategy, where it was convened by Mana Whenua. How I'd like to respond to that is what has changed because of it. I guess the first thing was that Tupuna Pono was never to be a strategy sitting on the shelf. And Wakatū, we deliberately didn't want to own it. That was quite important. So we sort of had to just leave it there just to sort of see, you know, what might come next. And it was always the aspiration that it would be a living strategy. One example is the Together Te Tauihu, which is the Kia Kotahi, the formal partnership between the eight iwi of Te Tauihu and our three local councils, so Marlborough, Nelson and Tasman. So that partnership demonstrates the ways that the councils will work together. Another example is called Tui Tui, and what was quite shocking when we went through the strategy work was how many not-for-profits or community groups were doing work in our communities. I think that I lost count after 1,000 just in Nelson Tasman. We met with some of the representatives of those groups. You know, they were tired, they were often going for the same funding. And so one of the priority actions out of the strategy was that we would like to see the collective, you know, the collectivization of those groups. You know, how can we meet smarter? Another one, I guess, was the priority actions was around the transition from conventional land use into more regenerative uses of land. And so we've, Wakatū's leading that work here. We're holding a conference, Lindsay, in November in Motueka with about 100 people in attendance. And we've got some international people coming in to speak. We've got a person coming in from Switzerland to talk about their food strategy. We've got an Indigenous group from Hawaii coming to share their stories. I think the website will go live this week. You know, when I think about the legacy of Tupuna Pono, and there's still much to do, but it's a living document. But I think it was a wonderful way to galvanise ourselves as communities, and I think it really shifted from the question of, you know, what's best for us today to what legacy are we leaving for those who come after us.
What a wonderful answer, and I'm so delighted it's still a very active and living document. Miriana, we are running out of time, but I don't want to close the show without giving you a chance just to speak to anything else that's on your mind at the moment.
You know, I think sometimes climate change is often talked about as though it's something that we need to fight, but I think it's actually something that we need to learn from. And it is exposing, I think, some of the weaknesses in how we've organised ourselves as communities, how we've organised our economy, and also, you know, our relationship with te taia, with nature. But I also think it gives us an opportunity to redesign those systems. And you know, from a tangata whenua perspective, we've never been separated from environment. We've never separated environmental wellbeing from community wellbeing. And healthy people depends on healthy ecosystems. Healthy ecosystems depends on healthy relationships. So I think, you know, we have got it all. We've got mātauranga Māori, we've got science, we've got innovation, we've got technology. I think we've got humility, and I hope we've got aroha. I'm an internal optimist, and I do think that as a nation we have something distinctive to offer, you know, not just to the world, but actually to ourselves. Our solutions lie within ourselves. We've got to work together. And if climate change teaches us anything, it is that our futures they're interconnected, and so perhaps our response should be too.
It's a great note to finish on, Miriana. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your wisdom with us, and I do wish you all the very best for whatever's coming ahead for you. Kia ora.
Awesome. Thank you, Lindsay. Kia ora.
Well, how cool was that? I take my hat off to the iwi of Te Tau Ihu. I think they're doing an incredible job. Next week, we'll have Victoria Mulligan, who is a certified foresight practitioner, and Victoria gives us some wonderful insights into her field of work. That will be followed by Dr. Catherine Knight, who spearheaded the recently run Reality of Everything Symposium, and then we have lots more wonderful expert guests. So thank you so much for your company. I do hope I enjoy it again in the coming weeks. And as always, kia kaha for the climate. Now, as you know, you're listening to Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and of other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz.
This podcast was brought to you by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air. Other great local podcasts are available through our website, freshfm.co.nz.